Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 39 of Season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Andy Golding of the Blueprint Review and the Spoiler Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Andy.
Good to be back, Rob, and I just want to take this opportunity at the beginning of the show to again remind listeners, as I wield my machine gun threateningly, that at some point in this show, I will be saying, I'm taking your train, at which point I'll hijack the podcast for a minute or two.
Don't shoot. All right, so minute 39 begins with Warren putting the mayor in his place and ends with Blue responding to Garber. So we ended things yesterday with an interesting conversation between the mayor and the deputy mayor about where they can get $1 million, and is it possibly going to be from someone's Swiss bank account? And today continues that conversation. Warren also ended things by telling the mayor that he's actually called in, you know, the same people that the mayor wants him to call to you know, discuss this whole situation. And, you know, Warren said to him, they're all on their way over. And he goes, but it's not good, no good running to them, Al. You're the mayor. The buck stops with you. So first of all, I think that's very interesting that they do it that way. That he's basically saying, you can consult with whoever you want, but the bottom line is that you're actually, you know, you're the one who has to make the decisions. It doesn't matter, you know, what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it, you know, the phrase "the buck stops here" makes a lot of sense. So it's usually, you know, giving credit to, I believe, Harry Truman said it. That the buck stops here.
I thought you were going to ask me. What the origin of it was, and I was going to say the 1950s, and you were going to tell me it was like 50 BC or something.
No. Well, first of all, if it is Truman, who I do believe it is Truman, if I remember correctly, he was president in the mid 40s, so you wouldn't have been that far off. Yes, it was Harry Truman. He had a sign on his desk that said that. Actually, it's referred to as buck passing. That's really funny. Never thought about that whole idea. It's the act of attributing to another person or group one's own responsibility. It is often used to refer to a strategy in power politics, whereby a state tries to get another state to deter or fight an aggressor state while it remains on the sidelines. Buck passing is not to be confused with scapegoating, the act of blaming.
So what is the buck in that analogy then? Is it okay. Like a...
No, it's the buck is actually refers to money, because the expression originated with poker.
I see. Yeah.
And then they would have like a marker or a counter that said who was the person who was supposed to deal. And you know, if you didn't want a deal, you can pass the responsibility over, and you can pass the buck to somebody else, to the next player. Interesting. I mean the idea goes really far back, but the phrase itself was basically popularized by Truman, you know, in the 1940s. You know, as we talked yesterday, as we mentioned yesterday, the mayor's a little bit of a weasel. You know, he doesn't really want to take responsibility for anything. He wants to push it off to other people. But what Warren is telling him is, look, you don't have a choice. The buck stops with you. And what's his response? He goes, oh, shit. And then Warren says, God help us. And then Warren starts to leave the room. And then the mayor goes, shit.
Oh, dear. I like
Once again,
that's one of
feeling
my
that.
favorite lines in the
Yes.
film,
yeah, he's not very happy about the whole thing.
think.
And then we're back at the train controlling station, and we see Carell giving orders to people, and he goes, "Mike, call Charlie at White Bay Road. Tell him I'll get to him as soon as I can." And he turns to someone else, "Hey Tom, where's that list on 144?" And then we see Garber trying to make a call, and he goes, "Command Center calling Pelham 123, come in." And then he turns around and he goes, "Hey Frank, you're hogging all the circuits. What do you want from me? I got motormen calling me from all over the line." "Well, tell them to shut up and get off the air." I love the way he says "shut up." He doesn't say "shut up," he says "shut up." "I need some more lines open here." And then Frank says to him, "I never thought I'd see the day that talking to murderers took priority over running a railroad." He goes, "Get off it, will you, Frank?" Which is a little insensitive of him, but. Then he goes, "My only priority is saving the lives of those passengers." "Screw the goddamn passengers! What the hell do they expect for their lousy 35 cents? To live forever?"
Yeah, that's a great line. You see, I think like a lot of Frank's dialogue in this minute is, it reminds me of the sort of gung-ho knee-jerk reactions that you read from angry people on social media these days. But it, because of the setup, when you see in the other minute when we talked about him hearing news of Kaz's death, I had a bit more sympathy for him this time round. But then they drop in a little nasty line like that for him as well, and it just sort of sours the pot. So there's a lot going on with Frank. I think he's an interesting character.
Yeah, I like Frank a lot. I think he gives a lot of character to everything that's going on by the way that he talks and acts and things like that.
Yeah, he's one of those. Dick O'Neill is one of those actors who was very familiar to me, but I couldn't necessarily place him in anything. He did turn up when I was watching Walter Matthau movies, and he turned up in House Calls as well. He had quite a nice role in that as those two were reunited in that, but I couldn't really place
Well,
that.
he's one of those actors that when I see him, I go, "Hey, that's the guy from Pelham 123."
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. How much do you think a current subway fare is in New York?
In New York, current subway. Oh, blimey. I've no idea of money, but I'd say, well, is there like a standard fare for wherever you go, and it's not different for different destinations? You pay a flat rate to ride the tube, do you?
I believe so.
I'm probably going to either way overestimate it or way underestimate it. I'm going to say $8.
No, it's 290.
All right, I've gone way over.
It's 290, and in January 26th, they're raising it to $3.
All right, well, they better not put me in charge. I'll put it up to eight.
Apparently. But I mean, that's an interesting jump that in 1974 it was 35 cents.
Yeah.
To jump from 35 cents all the way to almost $3 is a huge, huge jump over 50 years. How much do you think 35 cents from 1974 is worth today?
Oh, 35 cents four, and then I put up to nearly $3. Maybe like 170.
You think that's it?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Okay, it's actually 229.
Oh, so quite a bit more. So I've
Yeah.
underestimated this time. I'm
Yeah.
glad my movie trivia knowledge is better than my knowledge of everything else.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It has increased 500, more than 500% since then. So yeah. And how much do you think it originally cost to get on a subway train when they started them in 1904?
1904. 2 cents.
5 cents. It was
5 cents.
5 cents.
A bit closer to that.
Yeah, and it remained 5 cents until 1948 when it jumped to 10 cents. And then 5 years later in 53, it jumped to 15 cents. 66, it jumped to 20 cents. 70, 30 cents. And then 72, it jumped to 35 cents. And it stayed that way until 75 when it jumped to 50 cents. So it's also interesting looking at the intervals of how it's jumping.
Yeah.
Because it jumped 15 cents. You know, from 72 to 75, that type of thing. And you can see over the years that the amount of time that it jumped, you know, was sometimes just a year between them. And sometimes they jumped, significantly each time, you know, sometimes 15 cents, sometimes 10 cents, sometimes a quarter, you know, and, you know, the current rate of 290 has only been around for 2 years, since 2023.
And did you say they're already going to put it up?
Yes. On January 4th, 2026, it will be $3. Yeah. But apparently they've been trying to raise it even more for much longer. but the all these different political things happened that stopped them from trying to raise it more. Yeah, but yeah. So again, the conversation between Frank and Garber are just a lot of fun. And Garber goes, "Oh, you're beautiful." Then he turns back into the radio and goes, "You read me, Pelham 123." And then Frank goes, "If I was running things, I'd go in with guns and tear gas and blast them out." He turns to him and goes, "Yeah, well, you're not running things. So why don't you start doing your own work and let the police do theirs, huh? Like that lean-livered cop on the train, huh? What the hell is he going to start? When the hell is he going to start shooting? We don't even know if it's a he. Do you read me, Pelham 123? And, you know, I love how he's multitasking. You know, he's trying to get in touch with Pelham 123 while he's having this little bit of a verbal fight with Frank. And Frank goes, "Women cops, when the hell good are they? Probably can't find her gun in that goddamn purse."
Isn't that, is there a little bit of overlapping dialogue there? Doesn't he talk over a little bit of what he says? So that's a nice little way of showing that he's tuning Frank out at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. And but it also goes to show why Kaz and Frank are good friends.
Yeah.
they're kindred spirits from that perspective. And then finally Mr. Blue answers, and that's the way this minute ends, with him saying, "This is Pelham 123. So again, I like the way that the conversation flows in this particular minute. You know, I like the back and forth between Garber and Frank.
Yeah, no, it's I like that. With they're a good double act as well. They're not as broadly comedic as Warren and the Mayor, but there's a good energy between them, and it's not, they're not like the Odd Couple. They're not too different. I can see generally in day to day goings on, they would probably get on okay, but it's a the particular situation they're in has really, really ramped up the intensity between them.
Yeah, that's very true. I like it's showing us that not everyone's agreeing completely on how to do things.
Yeah.
But it's also Frank is giving information from the peanut gallery type of thing. You know, he's not the expert.
Yeah.
In this whole thing. So, you know, it's interesting, but we do see that the two of them do have a rapport, which I like.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up about this particular minute and the discussion?
Nothing about this particular minute, but I think this is the point that I'm going to say, I'm taking your train, because this is normally where we have top five lists, but today's trivia day, so normally we wouldn't have one, except today we are going to have one, because I've done top five Martin Balsam performances. I didn't like that Martin Balsam was going to be left out. Now, Martin Balsam is an interesting one, because some of the greatest films that he's in aren't necessarily his best performances. I'm just making a list of things he's in. Some of the ones that aren't even on my list are brilliant films that, if I was ranking it by quality of film, they would be right up there. He's in Psycho, On the Waterfront, All the President's Men, Cape Fear, 7 Days in May, Murder on the Orient Express, he's even in St. Elmo's Fire, mm-hmm. Breakfast at Tiffany's, which is some people think is a classic, but I can't stand Breakfast at Tiffany's, but he's good in it.
He's also in the Delta Force.
Yeah, yeah. I stopped listening at that point because he pops up in so many, and he seems to have this whole other career as a star of Italian films. He's in lots of Italian police dramas that I find quite interesting, because he seems to have starring roles in them, which he doesn't often have the starring role in these American films.
Well, again, he had to go to Italy in order to get that top billing.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I haven't seen any of his Italian films, but let's think. I'm going to put Pelham in there now, like I did with the other ones. And I think I'll put it there. Okay, so my original number five, I'll bump it down to number six, is a film called Middle of the Night. It's a brilliant film by Delbert Mann, who directed Marty, which won Best Picture, obviously. And it's written by Paddy Chayefsky, again, like Marty. And it's a film about a May-December romance between Frederick March and Kim Novak. And Martin Balsam plays Frederick March's son-in-law, who is one of the only people who approves of the relationship, and it's a nice little role in what I think is a very underrated film. What I'm going to put my number five then is a film that I can't in good conscience recommend as a great film, because it's not, I don't think, but it is one of Martin Balsam's best performances, and it's one of the few American films where he has what you could deem one of the lead roles. It's a film called Summer Wishes, Winter Dreams. It's directed by Gilbert Cates, who is not a great director, but he was more famous for, he directed a lot of the Academy Awards telecasts. But he did direct films as well. And in the early 70s, he had a couple that got a bit of Oscar attention. But tellingly, the only attention they got for the performances. So he seemed to be able to draw out great performances from his actors, but the films themselves feel very televisual. Martin Balsam, unfortunately, wasn't Oscar nominated for his role in this. He plays the husband of a depressed woman. He was Golden Globe nominated for it, though, but he gives a really good performance. So it's a better performance than it is a film, I think.
Well, I got to tell you, I hated that movie.
Yeah, it's not a great film, is it? No,
it was
it's
really, not a great really film.
Well, have you seen I Never Sang for My Father, which is another Gilbert Cates?
Oh, I love that one. I love
that. That frustrates me, because that is a film, again, it's a film, great performances, really well written, but I think it's terribly directed, and I struggle to get past the direction on that film as well.
I love what Gene Hackman did in that movie.
Yeah, he's got a Melvin Douglas as well. He's fantastic in it.
Yeah, and you know, I saw it again recently, a few years ago, and you know, the fact that my parents are older and I'm older, I can relate much more to that story than I could when I saw it when I was younger.
Yeah, it's harder. Yeah. So my next, I've picked his performance in Little Big Man, where he plays the snake oil salesman who is run out of town and seems to lose a different body part every time. So it's a lovely little performance that. So number three, I'm going to say his role in a film that I often say changed my whole perspective on the world is 12 Angry Men. He's the foreman of the jury, and he's just about holding things together, just about keeping control. And it's a great performance among many great performances in that film, I think. Now then, do I put... I'm not sure whether I'm going to put Pelham at number one or number two, because I love him in this. I think probably I'll put Pelham at number two. And my number one is Oscar winning, for his only Oscar nomination and win for 1,000 Clowns, which is a film that I love. I love that film. And he's on screen for, I think he only has about 10 minutes of screen time, but he has this fantastic speech that he gives, and he just nails it. So I think that's a film that it's kind of fallen through the cracks a bit. It's, and everyone's great in it. Everyone gets a great speech in that film, but for Martin Balsam alone,
amazing writing. There's no question about that. That movie is amazing writing.
Yeah.
I do need to rewatch it, because I remember it being really, really great.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be all that widely available at the minute. So my copy is an Italian copy, I think.
Mm, okay. Makes sense. Okay, that is a great list. Thank you very much for bringing that those things to our attention while you're hijacking. Okay, so what we are going to do is the daily segment is a game called 70s Movie Trivia Potpourri.
Okay.
I'm going to be asking you five questions about movies that came out in the 70s, and we're going to see how much Andy knows about them.
Well, I often say, when people ask me what my favourite era of filmmaking is, I usually say it's between the 50s and the 70s, so... Hopefully I'll do all right at this.
Okay. Okay, which of the following four disaster films was not released during the 1970s?
Oh, okay.
Earthquake, The Poseidon Adventure, The Towering Inferno, or Twister?
Twister.
Okay, that was a little too easy.
But, okay. Sneaked in a little another map hour reference there as well with Earthquake.
Yes. All right, let's move on to the next question. And your next question is, who was originally cast as the Waco kid in Blazing Saddles?
Richard Pryor?
No, we're not talking about we're not talking about Sheriff Bart. We're talking about the
Waco Kid. Oh, sorry, Sheriff Bart. Oh, the Waco Kid. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know this one. Who's it? The Waco Kid. No, I don't know. I'm trying to have a guess, but... Oh. No, you can't. And was it offered to John Wayne?
It was offered to John Wayne, but he wasn't the original person. They started filming with somebody and they fired him.
I don't know this one.
So the answer is Gig Young.
Oh.
He apparently he showed up drunk.
Yeah.
which fits with the part. But
maybe not helping them in acting it so well. I can't picture it. I can't picture it.
Yeah. So an interesting idea that they wanted him to be there. Okay, let us spin the wheel again and see what your next question will be. And it spins around and around and around. And your question is... Okay, what is the name of the camp in the 1979 movie Meatballs?
Oh, Meatballs. Oh, I'm getting all the wrong films here. What is? I have seen Meatballs, and I didn't love it. I don't think I'm going to be able to pull that one out of wherever it resides in my head. No, I can't think.
So the name of the camp is North Star.
North Star. I don't think that was anywhere in my head, to be
Camp
honest.
North. Okay. All right, let's spin again and see what your next question will be. Okay, what Burt Reynolds film included a basset hound named Fred?
I don't think I know this either. Burt Reynolds, I'm not, I don't know much about. I cursed this earlier, didn't I? By saying that the 70s is one of our favourite eras. Now, what Burt Reynolds films? I bet there's people screaming this answer out. I mean, I can't. The only one I can think of right now is Starting Over.
No, it's Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit. You see, I've never seen Smokey and the Bandit. So, yeah.
All right, and your final question.
Let's see if I can redeem myself here.
Your final question is, okay, in the movie, in the book and movie Love Story, okay, the main character played by Ryan O'Neal is based on a real life Harvard graduate turned actor turned Oscar winner, whose Harvard roommate was future Vice President Al Gore. So who is this actor? And this actor also had a small part in the movie Love Story. It was his
Oh, funny. Yeah,
feature film debut.
again, I've not seen Love Story for years. So it's a Harvard graduate who went on to win an Oscar.
And
Was
he
in
was
Love
the
Story. I can't think
roommate
of any of
in Harvard. He was roommates with Vice President Al Gore.
them. Roommates with Al Gore, right? So.
He even announced the nomination of Al Gore in 2000 at the
Oh.
Democratic National Convention.
Blimey, he's also it's a left-leaning actor as well. I can I know won an Oscar. I'm trying to think through all the Oscar winners now. And a Harvard graduate. Oh, this
Yeah,
is
I'll make it even easier. I'll tell you, he won
yeah, I think you're gonna have to give me a clue.
an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor during the 90s.
90s best supporting actors, right? No, I cannot think who best supporting actor. No, I can't bring anything to mind. A Harvard graduate.
I don't care.
I'm completely blanking. No, I can't get it.
The answer is Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, best supporting actor for, I always forget you won because I always think that Ralph Fiennes won that year, but he didn't, did he? He lost it to Tommy Lee
No.
Jones. Oh, well, that was a poor showing. I'm glad you started with an easy one.
Sorry about that. It's all random. I hope you do better on your couch for the other
Okay,
right, and once again, we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel.
forgot there's another question.
You have a way to redeem yourself once again, maybe. The original came out in 1960, and the remake is in 2002. A scientist creates a contraption that propels him far into the future, where he's hoping to find a utopian society, but instead finds something much, much more dire.
Is this night? Is it Planet of the Apes? I thought it's 60s too early, isn't it?
Yeah, Planet of the Apes came out in 68, and the remake, the first remake was in 2001. This is 2002.
Sci-fi. It's not the time machine, is it?
Yes, it is. Yes, the remake was with Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce, yeah. I don't think I've seen either.
The original was with Rod Taylor.
Yeah, I've never seen either.
Okay, they're both okay. Nothing great. They're a much better time travel movie. You know, just go watch Back to the Future. You know, okay, so thank you once again for playing. So, Andy, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Andy Golding?
Yes, you can hear my contributions to the now defunct Spoiler Podcast at spoilerpodcast.podbean.com. And you can read my writings about films at blueprintreview.co.uk.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rot Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierotminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierotminute@movierob.net. So, Andy, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to once again talk about this very... fun movie that you keep hijacking.
Yeah, as long as there's no more movie 70s movie trivia, I'll come back tomorrow.
Maybe I will hijack things and give you more. Who knows? All right, so until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.